Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today. The game.
Rocking it out on a Sunday. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Halfway home with you. On Team Have Not Eve Day. We get all the Team Have Notters tomorrow, baby. Hashtag Team Have Not. There'll be a lot of Line 12 calls for that tomorrow. It will be Brian Gebhardt producing, and it will be the two-man power trip of John Chuckery and Rob Tribble for 4 hours in the morning tomorrow, taking over your morning airwaves. I've already got the promo written for what I'm going to tweet out to start it off, so that should get it all fired up and ready to go. Even have a picture that I saved online to post on it. It's going to be so great. Management will definitely want to stay home tomorrow for all of that. 404-741-0929 is the phone line if you want to jump in and harass Brian on the phone lines. We're streaming online. It's 929thegame.com. Don't forget, also download your radio.com app. That way you can listen to us live, local, anywhere, anytime, any device that you got. Replays of the show will be up online, too. Our long, short interviews up there. We'll hear that again at 140 for you if you missed it earlier in the day and you're out and about moving around. All of our social media, you can go to at 929 The Game. That's Instagram, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's MySpace, it's Grindr, Tinder, Bumble, farmermating.com. I mean, whatever eHarmony, whatever your proclivities are. What was that one that was Lava? Yeah, Lava. Lava.com.
Sure, that's not like a nightclub or something?
What was that? It was like Lava was like one of those dating sites or something too back in the day. Something like that. I forget what it was. Some Lava or something like that. I don't remember. I did hang out at Cosmo Lava several times back in the day. That was great, right down the road here in Midtown. But anyway, I digress from all of that. You can get all of that there. I am on Twitter. I am at JMCH316 if you want to follow along with all the craziness that happens with me and interact on Twitter, as many of you do. So, been talking a good bit about the Braves and what has and has not transpired this offseason as we get ready for pitchers and catchers to report here pretty quickly. So, a couple of power rankings have come out here very recently about MLB, one from scout.com, one from bleacherreport.com, and I thought it was interesting as to where the Braves are ranked right now, considering that you still have arguably three of the biggest names, if not the three biggest names, in Machado, Harper, and Kimbrel out on the marketplace, still not signed, and what is thought about these teams. The Bleacher Report power rankings are pretty interesting because Red Sox 1, Yankees 2, Dodgers 3, Astros 4. No problem with all of that right there. 5, 6, 7, and 8. The Cubs 5, the Cardinals 6, Braves at 7, then the Nats at 8. The Nationals without Bryce Harper still 8th and right behind the Braves as far as power ranking goes. I find that very interesting, given how bad the Nationals were last year, given that they don't have their 40-homer, 100-RBI, former MVP of the league signed. I know they got Scherzer and they got Strasburg and they got other guys and Soto was terrific and all that stuff. I get it. But still, not having Harper, I'm not sure I agree with that. So that puts the Braves in the pecking order of the National League for Bleacher Report 4th behind the Dodgers, Cubs, and Cardinals. Scout.com has their power rankings of Yankees 1, Astros 2, Red Sox 3, Dodgers 4, Cubs 5, the Nats at 6, Cardinals at 7, Brewers at 8, Oakland 9, Tampa 10, Mets 11, Angels 12, then the Braves at 13. The sum of all their money line and pride probabilities projects to 81.3 wins. Their 90 wins was actually above expectation. You know, and they use some betting lines and stuff to come up with where they expect the win total picks and stuff like that. So it's interesting, but I get why the Cubs get the love because of the group of guys that they have, and they've been a World Series team, and I understand. They certainly weren't the class of the NL as a lot of people, I think, thought they would be with the Dodgers. And Milwaukee had such a great year, and Bleacher Report has them 10th on their list. But the Cardinals and the Cubs, I should say the Braves, should not take a back seat to the Cardinals and Cubs in the pecking order of all things. And this is where, literally, you talk about one big move. If you put Bryce Harper in the middle of the lineup of the Braves, there's no doubt that only the Dodgers at that point are at the level of where the Braves are. If the Braves bring in a Garrett Cole or a Dallas Keuchel or somebody that is of big name value, even if they add a Real Muto from the Marlins at catcher and upgrade that position out there, I think even right now, without one of those big moves, that there's no reason to think that the Braves aren't the second or third best team in the National League. And this goes back to what I keep harping on, and I'm going to keep harping on and keep harping on. Because one thing about sports is, what makes it such a great reality show is nothing is granted to you. Very few things are granted to you. The Patriots are going to be a playoff team as long as Belichick and Brady are together. Despite what everybody wants to tell you, and they had this many losses, and they're not. Remember that Sunday night game against the Lions that the Patriots lost? Oh, look at the Patriots. Tide has turned. Is the better days behind? And here they are ready to play for a Super Bowl again. Meanwhile, Detroit also ran in the NFC. So very few givens in the world of sports. So when you have the opportunity to capitalize on and you have the opportunity to make some hay and have a legitimate shot to win something, I'm a go-for-it kind of guy. Now, not sacrificing the future, because free agency is one of those things that baseball free agency has really changed over the last few years. You're not getting the 10-year, $300 million contract. Everybody wants to throw that out. That's not how business has operated the last couple of years. That's not how teams are doing business. If that were the case, if we were still in the 10-year, $300 million deal, there's no reason to believe that Machado and Harper wouldn't already be on a team. No reason to think that. I think more and more guys are going toward the NBA model, both from a player and from a general manager standpoint. I'd rather give you more money per year, but shorter years, and let you become a free agent or have an opt-out in a few years. You know, everybody in the NBA right now, Durant, LeBron, everybody goes with the 2-year deal, 3-year deal, opt-out after 1 or 2 years, take the mega salary for a year or two, and then read the tea leaves again. It's the Jason Hayward deal. It's in baseball. I think it's how we will see more of these things take place in baseball. So if that being said, if you only have to lock up Kimbrel, as Dave O'Brien talked about, for 3 years, it's okay to spend $15, $16 million if that puts you in World Series mode. You know, if you need to spend $15, $16 million per year to make you the more viable World Series contender, you have to do it. Because you don't know when these opportunities come along again. Don't make those big moves and have Freddie Freeman miss 70 games again. Have Ronald Acuna Jr. miss a year with a torn ACL. Any of those kinds of things, and your entire fortune changes. And you see with the Falcons, when you're there, you got to get a hold of it. Can't wait for that next next progression to just come right along, because sports doesn't guarantee you anything. So whether you think that the Braves are, you know, third, fourth, fifth, see, I think they're every bit of second or third in the National League. And I think if you added one of those big name guys in the mix, I don't think there's any question about the fact that there's no way you add Bryce Harper into the mix and not be one of the top two teams in the National League at that point. There's no question about it that the Braves are right there, no matter what else they do from there. I think if they add Craig Kimbrell to the back end of their bullpen, now they become a really viable threat, that a lot of those woes and issues go away and you have a much more structured role and you don't have to be as much of a rotating cavalcade of guys to trot out there. You don't have to worry about, you can pretty much have Vizcaino and Minter be your seventh and eighth guys depending on batting order, and let Kimbrell come in and put the hammer down in the ninth and walk off and move on. That's why it's so important to capitalize on the now. As Dan would say, own the now. Embrace the suck, own the now. Take advantage of all of it. So it will be exciting, and there's going to be a lot of buzz, if you will, for the Braves going into this season, into spring training. I think there'll be a lot of buzz about spring training, and especially if they can find a way to make a big move. That's where my concern gets in, is are they willing to roll the dice? You know, Double A did this up in Toronto with Tulowitzki and guys like that. You know, they rolled the dice on David Price and Tulo when they thought they had a chance to win. I hope they don't think that they're just one more year away and then it's time to really compete and go after it and say, well, you know, we were a year ahead of schedule. You can't think like that in sports. You can't. If you think like that in sports, you're going to look up in 3 years and say, geez. You know, ask the Washington Nationals. Like, how smart was it at the end of the day to have rested Steven Strasburg? How smart was it to have held Steven Strasburg back instead of letting him be Tom Seaver and let him go out there and do what it takes to help transform your franchise around? Hasn't worked out at all for them. Even with Scherzer and Harper and Strasburg and those guys. When you have that opportunity, man, you get to the playoffs and you have to go for it, man. You have to go for it. Sometimes you have to sacrifice some of that future. That's what the Braves have to do now. So if I'm putting it, I'm putting the Braves right there, second or third with the Cubs and the Dodgers. Dodgers, I think, number one, but Braves second or third with the Cubs being that other team. All right, when we get back, going to hear from our buddy D'Orlando Ledbetter. We had a chance to talk to him yesterday about a lot of Falcons news and information. We'll give that to you next. Sports Radio 910 The Game. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. Always remember this at the end of New Jack City, playing the version. Check me back in the Kia Studios, 92.9 The Game, your home for SB 53 in the ATL. Hey, yesterday had a chance to catch up with Falcons beat writer for the AJC, D'Orlando Ledbetter, as he's going to be in New Orleans covering the NFC title game. And I started off by asking D-Led about the Tack McKinley situation. And are teams mandated, can they force a guy to undergo evaluations?
No, it's not a part of the CBA. It's not forced upon, but the teams do extensive background checks before the draft, on the physical and mental makeup of their players, and academic testing that's used to determine how they learn or how they learn. You know, some people, you know, you can teach them by giving them reports and words, and some people you have to show them to be a film and illustration. So they do extensive background checks into their personal learning habits and behavioral habits. So they do have a big foul on all these players coming into the league.
Is there any reason to think that Tack McKinley won't be here for workouts or off-season conditioning or anything as the league season is about to wrap up?
Oh, no. From what I understand, it was a very, very minor situation, more of a communicative one than a physical nature. And Coach Quinn is in a very good place with, you know, the situation that happened in L.A., because it was of a personal matter. Nobody's really talking about that on the record. But, really, really minor. No criminal behavior or drugs were involved. There's no cause for major alarm, but, you know, we saw the initial reports, and that sent everybody into a frenzy. But, you know, we did some digging and found out, hey, you know, we got to take the people at their words that, hey, you know, this is really not a big deal at all. And Coach Quinn's in a very good place with it. He knows more about it than all of us. And so, you know, that's what I could share with you and your listeners.
The Orlando Ledbetter joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline, Falcons beat writer for the AJC. So, D-Led, I was talking several things Falcons in the last segment. I want to kind of let you follow up on some of the things that I was talking about. Number one is, do you think that Ryan Schrader and Robert Alford are going to be asked to change up their deals given how big of a cap hit those two guys are for next year?
Yeah, Robert's not that big, so I could see them, being a post-June 1 casualty. Schrader's is pretty big. I could see them going to his agent and asking him to redo his deal. And I know his agent, if I'm him, I'm hanging up the phone on that. And then they got to figure out, hey, can he play guard? Can we re-salvage him? You know, they did the contract with him, and I hate when, a player holds out, everybody's all up in arms. But, you know, if the team wants to get rid of you, they can cut you at any point, you know, and decide to take that dead hit. They've done it in the past. I believe the last one was Sam Baker, where they took on a major hit. That certainly hurt their efforts moving forward, not necessarily next year, but if they do decide to part ways with Schrader, it would be impactful. The prudent thing to do is if his agent won't redo the deal, which would be malpractice on his part to redo the deal, is to try to salvage him. Have him come to camp. Maybe he could find his mojo. Maybe Mularkey could put him back together. We'll be helping Chris Morgan with the line and move forward with him if he can regain his mojo.
D-Led, I'm curious as to what you think about Mohamed Sanu being here on this team next year. I think that's a very wild card position. Do you think it's a lock that Mohamed Sanu is back as a Falcon, or is there a possibility that he becomes a cap casualty?
I've been saying that for a couple years of thinking that, but what I know is that they love the guy. He, Coach Raheem's not cutting him, Coach Dan's not either. You know, there's something about the Jersey guys sticking together there. He's been productive. He's a guy that's going to see his whole contract through.
On the WaitForIt.com hotline, D. Orlando Ledbetter joining us, Falcons beat writer for the AJC. So I was talking about free agency in the last segment, D. Led. Where do you think that are going to be a couple of top positions that the Falcons are going to use what right now is not a lot of free agency money, but where do you see them prioritizing the positions for that?
Well, John, if you look at their draft record, going back to 08, and I did this online last week, they can't draft linemen, so they're going to have to get some linemen in free agency. And the linemen that have been playing for them over this period, the best ones have been acquired via free agency or trade. Matt, Alex Mack, Andy LaVitre, and that whole group. Chris Chester, the only people that they've drafted that have been pretty good over since 08 were Sam Baker, Jake Matthews, Joe Holly, and Garrett Reynolds, and everybody else has been pretty much a bust. They did develop Ryan Schrader. We saw a drop-off last year. Now can they put him back together? So they're going to get some guards. You know, you got Fusco, had a broken foot. You wanted him. Zane Beatles was 33. Andy LaVitre tore the same pec. Can't really rely on that. But they're in such a bad state at the line that they might have to bring all those old guys back. Ben Garland and Wes Weiser just hasn't worked out. Those guys, they need to move on. They tried to move on from them last year and make them reserves, but they ended up playing them. So I fully expect them to clear cap space and go after some linemen that fit, some guys that can push some people around and open up some holes. They can't be 27th in the rushing game next year.
Comment on what I think, D-Led, in the sense that I agree with you. I think they have to probably realistically get at least one starter in free agency at this point, whether they think that's right tackle, whether they think that's one of the guard positions. But at the same time, they have to start finding a young guy or two. They you know, Alex Mack's not playing forever. They have to start drafting. At some point, you have to have some cheap labor. I mean, more than just, you know, we have to have some guys who can play, but you also have to have some cheap labor. You can't have four free agents and a high-priced Jake Matthews on your line and be competitive, you know, at everywhere else. I think at some point, D-Led, they're going to have to break down, track record or not, and invest some high picks into some youthful offensive linemen to make a difference here.
Yeah, I understand that thinking, John. Unless it's Quentin Nelson or Ryan Ramczyk, I wouldn't do it. So you better do your homework on that. Those are two guys that have stepped right in here in the last year or two. And, you know, Quentin was playing last week, and Ryan will be playing tomorrow for the Saints. Do your homework. Don't mess it up like you did the Peter Collins and Lamar Holmes pick. They do have some projects they've been trying to develop, but it's been slow because of the new contact rules. You can't really hit anymore. So, but Matt Gonneau, the right tackle from Division III Wesley, up near Delaware, he's the guy that didn't play at all last year. Sean Harlan's been around for 2 years. He was a fourth-round pick. Sean Harlow, his dad was an old New England Patriot. So, from, you know, those guys, you got to get something out of those guys. You've been spending money on them for 2 years, and you don't know if they can play yet. So I'm with you on developing linemen. It's really, really hard now with this new CBA since 2011 where you really don't even hit in practice anymore.
D-Led, last thing for you as we wrap up. I got about a minute left. Do you think defensive tackle from a free agency standpoint is in play, considering what you really got, which is next to nothing out of Terrell McClain, and we didn't see a lot of Deidre Sanaat down the stretch? Is defensive tackle in free agency something that they may have to address too?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. They missed Don Terry Poe. They got a, you know, and I don't know if – I think they could – I would have found a way to pay him and maybe – you know, not have as deep of a rotation. You know, kept around guys like Shelby and Brooks Reed. I would have gave that money to Poe, and the ends would have just had to play, or I would have found some young ends and kept the big D tackle. So, Sanaat can make a big jump from year one to year two. They really want him to play. They saw a little bit, didn't like some of the stuff. You know, he was one of the guys in the Cleveland game that got pushed around a little bit too much. So, you know, they got to think he can get better. But, yeah, no, I think he definitely got to get a big tackle in there to go with Grady Jarrett in order to keep those linebackers off of Deion Jones. So, you know, if you can keep the linebackers, keep the guards off of Deion, then he's free to go make all the plays. So that tackle part is going to be very important for them. It's a good draft for tackles, too, so maybe you can get one at 14.
Check him out on Twitter, as always, D. Orlando AJC, beat writer for the Falcons for the AJC. Join us on thewaitfor.com. As always, D-Led, appreciate it, buddy. Have fun. Don't get anything dumped on you in New Orleans by those people down there.
Okay, John, I'll be on alert. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And there you go. One thing I was just saying to Jared out in the break, though, because there's reports about when Pat Mahomes becomes a free agent his rookie deal is going to run out in 2020. Because he gets the fifth-year option and all that, about how he's going to get a $200 million contract, which is fine. And Jarrett was like, well, how do you pay everybody? Well, you know, D-Led and I were talking about, you really do in the NFL. You have to draft well, and you have to get some cheap labor. You can't have a bunch of $8 million-a-year guys on your offensive line. You can't have that. You think about the Falcons' offensive line money dumped in. Schrader's almost $8 million. Mack is going to be $9 million on the cap. Jake's going to be, whatever, 13, 14 million on the cap. You can't have, you know, two more $8 million guys on your line because you can't draft. At some point, you have to get cheap labor. That's why when you look at Quentin Nelson, that's the most valuable pick in the NFL. It really is. Don't tell me what anybody else did. That's the most valuable pick in the NFL. You have a first-team all-pro offensive lineman standing right next to the football that for the next, you know, for five total years, you get on the fairly cheap. Fifth-year option moves up some, but even that's not a backbreaker. That's invaluable in the NFL. Invaluable. Even if it's a second-year guy, think about what you've gotten out of Grady Jarrett for 4 years. Guy that's $600,000 on the cap. That stuff's invaluable to have. That's why drafting in your early spots is mass critical. Yeah, I know it's the conference title game today, but just like a car crash, do you have to watch the Saints and see if they win? Or do you kind of not want to watch? We'll talk about that next. John Chuckery in the Key Studios, Sports Radio 99 The Game. You're home for SB 53 in this ATL.
Breaking the law, breaking the law. I think the teams are playing good offense and good defense. I mean, what makes a good team? You know, it's not just one side of the ball or the other. And obviously, you have to have good quarterback play. I think it's hard to get to where we're at now, being one-dimensional. And I think when you look at the teams that are playing, what Kansas City did to Indianapolis last week defensively was real impressive. I mean, generally, when the season's over with, the best team wins. And that's not just in one area.
That is Saints head coach Sean Payton bringing us back in. Live from the Kia Studios, Chuckery hanging out with you. Go until 2 o'clock today, then we hand it over to pregame coverage of the NFC title game. Rams in New Orleans, 3:05 kickoff, 6:15 pregame, 6:40 kickoff for the AFC title game. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Little fifth dimension. Coming up at the top of the hour, by the way, Brian said we reversed the roles and they picked my brain today. Brian does have a paragraph written. If you've listened to the show, you know that we have a rather lengthy paragraph intro to get, you know, Randy to recap all of his stuff that goes on. So Brian says he got something for me. It's not nearly as accomplished, I know, because I'm not on Sirius XM or Alex Marvez doesn't even know who I am or any sort of thing like that. So we'll hear what all that nonsense and shenanigans is coming up at the top of the hour. But we talked to Jason Cole yesterday. We previewed the conference title games. I do believe that the Saints and Patriots are going to be there in the end for all this. Now, I certainly hope I'm wrong about the Saints, but you know, if I'm looking at it logically and saying who I think wins, I don't think the Saints are going to lose at home today. So, as much as certainly Falcons fans, myself included, are rooting for the Rams to win today, how much are you invested actually into watching the game today? Is it like a car crash? You know, when we see a car crash, we have to stop and watch and see what goes on and figure it all out. Is that what this Rams-Saints game is today for Falcons fans? Is this our car crash moment where you have to watch? Because I get that if you're an NFL fan, and look, I'm a huge fan of the conference title. There are certain events like I'm a big fan of in general. Final Four in college basketball, always been a big fan of the Final Four. I love the atmosphere of the Final Four. I love those back-to-back games when you've had, you know, four teams that have won four playoff games, basically, four tournament games. I love that. I love the conference title games. You know, there's a much more, what do I want to say, aggressive and a much more, hey, this is it moment that you get in those games, because teams have to do some things you normally might not do just simply because there is no tomorrow, as Apollo Creed would say. There is no tomorrow. So I've always enjoyed more than really the wild card round or the divisional round or even the Super Bowl by and large. To me, the conference title games are always those ones that are so good and always such interesting matchups. But this is different for Falcons fans this year. This is different for us to have to watch and go through what takes place. I probably understand most people watching the game, but if the Saints win, there's not going to be a Falcons fan on earth that's going to watch the post game, right? There's no possible way, even as Falcons fans, you could watch that car crash of a celebration and confetti falling or whatever's going to end up happening for them to get to the Super Bowl and champagne in the back and here's Drew Brees and here's Mrs. Benson. And here's Sean Payton and everybody's celebrating. Now, you might do it if the Rams win the thing, or I'm wondering, will some people just not want to watch that game? And I understand that completely. I understand the entire idea of, do you even want to sit down and watch that happen? Especially if it's a nip-and-tuck game, and the Saints always find a way to pull it out. I don't know. There's there's a lot of emotion about wanting to watch a game like this and certainly rooting against your arch rival, because this is one of the better rivalries in all of the NFL. This is top of the heap rivalry in the NFL. And there aren't a whole lot of those. There aren't a bunch of those things, you know, certainly not the way college is, you know, there are a lot of those types of rivalries. There aren't very many of these left in the NFL that are real, true rivalries. This is one of them. You know, this is one of those matchups that is a real rivalry, you know, when you talk about Falcons and Saints. And so I think it's going to be hard if you're a Falcons fan to want to sit there and watch hours of it. Now, maybe if the Rams are blowing out the Saints, just blow them out the whole game, then that will be an easy watch. That, to me, is about the only way to easily watch that game, is just watching the Rams dominate the game today and just pistol whip the Saints all day long. Just put a beat down. Sort of like the beat down that the Patriots put on the Chargers last week. You know, Randy and I were here, and Randy's watching that thing, and just nothing that the Chargers could do, they could stop the Patriots. Patriots just dominated them, owned them right from the start. By the way, anybody realize that Bill Belichick decided to not defer, and he took the ball first and took his offense down? You know, I'm just high flower branch. How you doing up there? Something to just think about when your offense is the much better unit to go outside the box. But that's why he's, you know, the best coach in the history of the NFL, is because he doesn't really care about what you think your odds and your you know, statistics and your Pro Football Focus things say about all this stuff. But short of a blowout for the Rams, this is gonna be tough to watch, because Saints are going to be at home. You know that crowd's going to be jacked up. You know the environment. You know they're going to hype all that up. I'm assuming, Brian, are we getting Troy and Joe Buck on this game? I'm assuming that's who doing it.
It's Fox. It has to be, since it's the Fox broadcast. Yeah.
So we're going to get those two dunderheads that are going to do the game. There's no Cowboys for you know, Troy to hype up, although I think he does love Drew Brees. So you're probably going to get a lot of Saints love in this game from the Cowboys. So everything kind of pointing toward this is not going to be a fun broadcast to watch. Maybe in some ways, if the Saints blow out the Rams, that'll make an easy decision of you ain't got to stay around very long. Because if this game gets to be like last week on the opposite side, where last week the Eagles took a 14-0 lead over the Saints, and you wait for that, and you wait to see if there's going to be a comeback. If the Saints get out to like a 14-0 lead, I got news for you. It's going to be over today for the Rams. They ain't coming back. That team's going to be rolling, and that momentum and that crowd and that environment and that atmosphere and everything that you want to add into the mix of all of that is going to play right into that hype train. So I don't think the game is a blowout one way or the other. I think these teams are just too good offensively to allow that to happen. Hard to always count out either one of these offenses. I probably trust the Saints offense a little bit more, just because, not even so much personnel, but just because they've been there. They also have the better quarterback. I mean, that has to factor into it. They have two things. They have the best play caller in the NFL, and they have the better quarterback of the two. And maybe Drew Brees is the second best quarterback in all of the NFL. You know, I mean, you talk about Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Drew Brees. That's the top of the food chain. I know what Mahomes has done this year, but, you know, we'll learn a lot more about Patrick Mahomes later on this afternoon and what he can do in that. And by the way, I saw when the temperatures are below 30, Patriots are 24-4 with Tom Brady in those games when temperatures are below 30. I don't think that's a misnomer. I don't think it's one of those fluky kinds of stats. I think that's one of those things that there is some legitimacy toward doing it. So while I am picking the Saints, I think the Saints do win the game today. I don't know how invested I am into trying to watch the game. And I do love the conference championship games. I hate the idea of sitting there watching and seeing them happy and seeing them celebrate and all that. Maybe I'll get some scoring updates first, Brian, and just kind of, you know, maybe it's a blowout, then, you know, maybe I'll – a Rams blowout, then maybe I'll check it in from there. There is one note on the game today that we'll give you next, as the second-best tight end in UJ history. I said it. The second-best tight end in UJ history is not playing today. It's all up next, Sports Radio 920 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Andy Bunker and the Bunker Mentality. Night.
Game.
92.9, your home for SB 53 in the ATL, as corporately mandated to say. Chuck, we're back in the Key Studios with you. One additional note from the game today. New Orleans Saints tight end. That would be the second best tight end in Georgia history, not the first, especially after that drop that he had for a touchdown earlier this year. Ben Watson will be inactive against the L.A. Rams today. He's been battling appendicitis, and he missed practice Wednesday and Thursday as doctors tried to decide whether surgery was necessary. Watson's been able to avoid that for now and return to practice Friday, but the Saints decided he would be inactive for Sunday. If surgery is necessary, so it'll be a tight turnaround for Watson to try to play in the Super Bowl. Should the Saints make it? So 38 years old, and of course, as we said, he is only the second best tight end in UGA history, as our scooter riding partner is the first best tight end. So we're going to have a very interesting segment coming up. You know, we normally do Pick Randy's Brain, but since Randy's not here, Brian had asked about picking my brain. And I asked him, I said, are we going to get a paragraph? Because if you listen to Pick Randy's Brain, you know that we have an entire intro that has to be read before we can even get to starting to ask our 10 questions for our member of team have. Things like, you know, Cooking with Randy and Cafe McMichael, Chicken Thighs, No Chicken Breasts, Alex Marvez's Favorite Dolphin, Man Who Stole the 97, Georgia North-South High School All-Star Game Trophy, all that kind of stuff. So, going to be very interesting. We'll see what Brian has in store for us as we will do Pick Chuckery's Brain all next after Jared Smith let you know who won the NML's Cup. Sports Radio 929 The Game.
I look at you and see the passion eyes of me.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.